Computer, play me a podcast.
Parameters.
Star Trek The Next Generation. Time period, early 21st century.
Program loaded. Green Shirt, a newbie's trek through the next generation. With your hosts, Cameron.
How does the holodeck work?
Marcy.
Guys, it looks like a dildo.
And Rob.
I think a lot of the things in the show, yeah, not bad.
This week's episode, Deja Q.
Last week we went to a birthday party for one of my sons' friends, and it was inside one of those...
Which friend?
It's not about him, so it doesn't matter. Ethan! His name was Ethan.
Oh, yeah, Ethan. Yeah, he's cool.
Yeah, so it was held at one of those indoor playgrounds, which is like basically like a padded hamster cage for kids with slides and ball pits and tunnels and tubes. Basically, the parents just throw their kids in there and hope for the best, right? But not this parent. What do you think the first thing I asked was when I showed
up? Can adults get in there?
Exactly. And I'm happy to report that the answer was yes.
Awesome.
So I kicked off my shoes, went in. Now, the structure was kind of divided into two parts. The left side was castle themed. The right side was pirate themed. And in the middle was this courtyard that when I walked in and looked up, I realized it could only be described by a rational, reasonable adult human being as a kill box. Because one level up, along both sides are all these Nerf guns pointed down at you, filled with like these foam balls, very American Gladiator-y, each one manned by like a tiny blaze or nitro, just like pelting everyone down below them.
Like little kids were up there?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And...
in their little spandex suits.
I wish.
What is your American Gladiator name? Let's think about that for...
Camster.
Lightning!
Camster.
Camster.
Camster ball.
There you go.
Boy. I'll be deaf.
Wow.
Death.
Oh, jeez.
Lightning, death, and camster ball.
Yeah. Sounds appropriate, yeah. I think. But guys, I learned something about myself that day.
You're an old man?
Almost the contrary. Although I wasn't the only adult in there, there's something about me, guys, that when a 10-year-old boy looks at me...
they want to hit you with Nerf guns.
They see a sign that says, attack this dad.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you get a bloodlust.
Well, I do now. Yeah. There's a target on my back when I'm in there, apparently. I looked up. This kid, like, locks eyes on me. He laughs maniacally and just pelts me with balls. So I throw a few back at him, and we exchange some volleys, and I think that's it. I was wrong. So wrong, guys. I go off to find Atreyu, who I'm hoping is not having, like, a sensory overload meltdown somewhere.
Right.
Side note, didn't have to worry. When I did find him, he quickly told me that the pirate ship was Venom's headquarters, and the castle was Carnage's headquarters, and then he went off to go web-sling them or something. I don't know. But in the meantime... I was being hunted.
By the same kid?
By the same kid. I'm like crawling through these Jeffrey's tubes with like this little tiny Roga Danar from a couple episodes ago, relentlessly after me, arms filled with foam balls. And that's how the whole hour went. Like I would eventually disengage from one just to have another kid like pick up foam arms against me. I was in the kill zone again. Uh-huh. I see another kid eagle eye me and he shoots me. I throw some at him. I turn around. There's like... three tiny Clockwork Orange gang members behind me, menacingly tossing their balls up and down in the air. Are you against us? Us? I didn't realize there was an us. That was one kid. By the end of it, I believe to a child, everyone who had followed me, like, ganged up, like the Sharks and the Jets joining forces to bring me down.
So many references.
I mean, it's always kids versus adult.
Yeah.
Yes, thankfully, I guess.
Us anyways, always be them.
Yeah.
Well, how are your biceps and triceps feeling after
I got a workout
crawling,
in.
That, all that planking
oh,
you were
man.
Doing?
Oh, man, yeah, yeah.
Did this kid follow you home?
Thankfully, no. No, I ended up on the ground with like a dozen kids. Again, I think maybe two of them were part of our party. I didn't know any of the other kids. They're all like tackling me. Some are throwing balls at me. I'm trying to like tell them how you battle honorably. You don't fight an opponent while they're on the ground.
So you're being Worf right now?
Yes, exactly.
You're like, don't throw barrels at me.
No barrels. That's my weakness.
Yeah. And yeah, foam balls.
Thankfully, like, the birthday kid's dad, like, had to yell at me from outside, birthday cake's ready, come on. So I, like, disengage from the pile of 10-year-old limbs. I make my way out. A couple of them still follow me outside the structure throwing balls. I have to, like, put on a veneer of maturity because I'm now surrounded by my peers, mm-hmm. other parents.
I'm
like,
an adult.
Oh, we don't throw balls out here, guys.
Next time you find yourself in a kill box, you've got to take the biggest kid and you peg him in the face with a... with a foam ball, and then you.
You're not stuck in here with me. Wait, I'm not stuck in here with you.
So lesson
I can't
is,
even get the quote right.
Don't go into the kill box with Rob, because right. he'll make a lesson of you.
No, no, it's still adults versus kids. You find the biggest kid. I wouldn't take Cameron out. We would team up to be a pretty. Right.
You'd be like, "This is my toady, and I'm taking you down."
Yeah. He's like my worm tongue.
Use me as a shield.
Okay, I think we hit like every single random
every reference possible.
Reference, yeah.
Pretty good, pretty good.
All right.
Well, let's do some more because welcome to Green Shirt, everybody. A newbie's trek through the next generation. I am Cameron, a mere mortal who has never watched the next generation until now. And here with me, my omniscient deitous co-hosts, we have the Morgan Freeman to my Jim Carrey, Rob.
Oh, thanks, Worm Tongue.
Wait, what? And the Alanis Morissette to my Jay and Silent Bob.
Yes!
It's Marcy.
That is, I need to rewatch that movie. I've been thinking about it, actually, because I'm going to Alanis Morissette.
Oh, yeah, you are. And snapping her fingers and magically appearing on our bridge this week, our guest host, the Whoopi Goldberg to my Kermit the Frog. Bobby.
Whoa. Oh my gosh, I feel so, thank you.
She just appeared here. That's crazy.
She's just here.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah. So, what is your relationship status with the Next Generation? Why are you here?
Where did you discover it?
Well, I kind of watched the original growing up because I grew up with my grandma, so we were watching a lot of weird stuff. I won't go into the other. I could talk to you about Bonanza if you want, but I won't.
That's our other podcast.
Yeah. I mean, if you want, if you get into that, let me know.
But then, Patreon.
At a weird point in high school, at 15, I moved in with my mom, and she used to be. It might be a little downer, but she used to be a little bit of a raging alcoholic. But at this point, she was just a major stoner.
Oh, okay.
And so. She would come home from work and instead of becoming a raging alcoholic would just get super stoned and put on Star Trek. And I was like, this is the best version of my mom ever.
Really like the descriptor of a little raging alcoholic. I like that.
Right, right? And so I had to take this. It was like my daughter mom time. I was like, if it's Star Trek, it's Star Trek. And you know what? It was amazing. We would just a couple hours every day we would watch. She would chill out while she was, you know, not a small raging alcoholic. And it was great. Like, I got a love for it, and it never went away. I think I've watched TNG through and through, I don't know, 4 or 5 times.
Wow.
So it's when this podcast came up, I was super excited, and I started rewatching it again because, I mean, when do you get to hear, like, people like you talk about a thing you liked a long, long time ago?
Yeah.
And boldly go where no podcast has gone before. So.
Can we pause real quick and let Rob know that I think there's chocolate milk?
It's a coffee that spilled a while ago, and okay. I was trying to figure out what to do. I'm trying to stop it with my foot.
It's failing miserably because it's headed right at me.
Yeah, it was an avalanche of chocolate.
The dog. It's a coffee. One moment. I'll find a rag.
Okay, let's take a little break here.
Well, this week we watched Deja Q? Basically, the Star Trek equivalent of childbirth. Mm-hmm. It begins with nudity and ends with a cigar.
Good one, Cam.
And I'm done. I'm out.
That's
all my good material right there. Yes, we open up with the Enterprise orbiting Brayel 4.
Did anybody else see a skull in that asteroid?
No.
Oh, man, I tried to take a screenshot, but it turns out when you screenshot on your phone, Netflix turns to just black. You can't. They know that you're trying to. The very first shot, this asteroid, maybe I'll post that to Instagram. The asteroid looked like a skull face to me
for a moment.
I was wondering why they chose an asteroidal moon.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if they just wanted to use the same prop from the asteroid a couple episodes ago in the Hunted.
And then later they just keep calling it the moon.
Yeah.
And I wonder if we're going to disagree again on like the effects, because I was like, nice moon.
I know, it was a thing.
Like when they kept doing like the half shot of the moon, you know?
No, there's a lot of good shots.
We'll just
of the
argue
Enterprise.
About how tubby Q looked. That's all. We'll
just I'm so glad I wasn't the only one.
I didn't think he was tubby looking.
It's actually not me that had this opinion. This is something Bobby said off air. So
when you become mortal,
I can't wait for
you
this.
Get fatter.
That's right. It wouldn't be fair to make him human and then make him like
a god.
Perfect specimen.
Yeah.
Not like that guy in that previous episode.
What if they like made him not John DeLancey, but just some tubby, like really ugly old man or something? That would have been awesome.
Danny DeVito.
Or me. Yeah.
No.
Just a dumpy guy.
No.
No, I'm very handsome.
Exactly like Rob.
No. I'm pretty great.
He's pretty handsome.
So yeah, Bray L4.
Yeah, a planet inhabited by a race of assholes.
I know, they have butt faces, but mouths.
God damn it!
You would think someone in the makeup department would be like, let's pull the sphincter back a little bit in the lips, guys.
I mean, only one had the real butt mouth. The other one had a semi-butt mouth.
Yeah, it was weird because also it had like a line around the lips, but then you could still see the real lips like moving behind it. Yeah. So it was really like a sphincter. And I was like, who decided on this alien? Like, what is the evolutionary process that made the butthole
Do you think
face?
Their butts look like mouths?
Maybe they eat from their asses.
Wait, you said lips and inside of lips. Are you sure it's not labia?
Ah,
could be. We've had that recently.
It was a little more spherical.
We've had that in some recent aliens.
They like the vagina foreheads a lot. I know we shouldn't complain too much because we have had like just a surplus of very human looking aliens recently.
That's
so it's
true.
Nice to see some makeup at least. And I realized why these ones were made up so much. Because they only needed to use them for like half a day of shooting, if that.
Right. True. Very in it very little.
Yeah, that's the irony. If like the aliens aren't that important to the plot, they're going to be like super alien. But if we're going to see a planet full of them and they're going to be in like every shot,
right?
They're just humans.
They're literally just in that
spray
one.
Spray paint in their hair.
Right. One camera angle on them. You're right.
Yeah.
Good point.
I think these actors, I believe one of them is Dr. Garen. Is that?
Sure.
Oh, and I didn't maybe, even think to know their names.
And maybe the other one is scientist. If so, we've got Richard Cancino and Betty Miyamoto.
Oh.
Richard Cancino is, his trivia, best known mostly for his voice works of male characters with a gentle personality and would sound resentful when angry or dissatisfied in animes and video games.
Oh, okay.
Steve Buscemi, basically.
He's best known for Ninja Scroll, Rise of the Planet of the Apes, The Wolverine, and Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, all as miscellaneous. Like, okay. He does voice.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
I think
yeah.
He's just like background crowds and things. But he's also in.
He was an ape.
He's in 211 things. Tons of like Mobile Suit Gundam, like anime. And then Remington Steel, of course, because everybody's
sure.
in that.
Is he in Jag as a voice?
He's not in. Boy, I wish.
The Jets.
It's like after every 50 anime in his IMDb, then it's Melrose Place. Like it's like where he plays a mechanic.
Oh, nice.
And then finally, Betty Miyamoto is known for her work on Star Trek The Next Generation, Knots Landing, and A Death in California. She's only in seven things. Real Ghostbusters, the cartoon, and Married with Children.
All right.
Moving on.
So they keep using the term the Western continent here, and they did that last episode too, and I thought that was kind of weird because to the Enterprise, no continent is Western or Eastern, and
right.
You think the aliens would just use the names of the continents, but even they call it the Western continent.
If you're looking from above, there's a left and a right side.
But it's going to be rotating, so it's going to change.
And they might be upside down.
That's true.
Enterprise could be upside down.
There was some interesting like phrasing in this episode,
mm-hmm.
like blow it to pieces. And at one point, I think Geordi says something about like it's an open book. Like these are very like 19th, 20th century phrases. So maybe there's something to that too. Maybe they're commenting.
They like their antiquated language.
Oh yeah.
Another interesting term they use is I think the scientist. Uses the term land quake at one point.
Yeah.
Right.
I was like, wouldn't she call it a Braille quake?
Oh, interesting.
Oh, instead of Earth.
Right.
Land quake.
Yeah.
Well, Braille quake doesn't have the same ring to it.
I know that someone wrote earthquake in there and like...
They're like, you can't
later
use
on,
that.
On the set, it was probably the grip was like, guys.
But land quake is so much more PC, right?
Right.
I mean,
right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Places
Come
have
on.
Lands, Inclusive. They have quakes.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's be woke here.
Yeah, but we use Earth for Earth and for Earth.
That's true.
So it
Capital
wouldn't have
e,
been wrong.
Capital E, lowercase e, maybe. You're right.
There's also all kinds of sci-fi gobbledygook in this episode.
There was.
The first one was that the moon has a ferrous crystalline structure.
Oh, yes.
It's able to withstand tidal forces.
Well, speaking of moons, we soon get a naked butt on the bridge of the Enterprise.
Woo-hoo! Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I guess he actually had to be totally naked to do that, too.
He looks pretty naked in that shot.
He could have had like a...
I looked up him being naked because obviously. And it was like, they tried all the whole bunch of things, but because of the angle, I guess he did have to be completely naked for that shot.
Oh, yeah, that one shot. Like,
he probably demanded it.
And I love when he falls on the ground. He's got like this goofy look on his face. It looks like my cat after he's gotten super high off catnip. His tongue out.
Yeah,
he's
that was,
born, right?
That had me on board. That like that weird face followed by his... what does he say?
Red alert.
Red alert. Like, I don't know. Yeah, it really sold me on it.
Yeah, so the Enterprise is trying to ineffectually move this moon, and then they start hearing like this screeching noise and a bright light, and Q arrives.
I was so surprised to see Q in this episode.
So I thought we could do kind of a little bit of a recap of the Q episodes, because I'm wondering if you remember any of the past ones. Ooh. So he shows up in Encounter at Farpoint, and then there's Hide in Q, where he makes Riker, it gives him superpowers, basically gives him Q powers. And then there's Q Who, where he's like shoots the them episode. To the Borg. So do you remember like any of those episodes very well?
I mean, Q is definitely one of my favorite characters. That's why I chose this episode. And I was like, oh, sweet, it's this one. I definitely remember the first one. They kind of blend in a little bit. It's hard not to think about that big season finale where when Q puts I like when he shows up in his mischievousness. He's very much like a Puck character in a way.
Right.
Mm. Anytime he shows up, it's just great because Picard just is itching out of his skin. And that's really fun to watch. Like, my favorite captain who can handle anything lose his mind. So in a way, Q's kind of his son to me, you know, just kind of constantly poking him. But
that's why him and Data get along so well.
I was going to say, and I love some of the pair-ups of Q with the different crew members, and Data's a great one in this episode to put him up against.
I mean, and I think you can kind of see a little bit of Q's arc of kind of being obsessed with humanity and learning a little bit from humanity of like selflessness and some of those things that Picard doesn't think he's capable of. But I think over even like the next
episode,
but like you'll see more of that. It is kind of funny to rethink back about those episodes and just be like, oh, Q, you're such an asshole. And then watch his like pettiness here when he's like a human is kind of fun.
Well, it's kind of interesting because there were times when I was like, why are they so mad at Q? Oh, right. 12 people died from the Borg the last time. The last time they saw him like was the biggest casualty count for the Enterprise.
And what was the scene? Like, I can't get it out of my head. Doesn't Wesley get like stabbed through the back in the Riker episode?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, like this. So he sends them to this planet. I don't know if you remember it, but there's like the weird ape creatures that are dressed up like the British. And then like Wesley's just like, oh my gosh. And then he gets skewered through the back and just shit like that.
That was season one. You thought that would have been like season three for the fans or something.
Nice.
I did keep wondering, like, what if Picard just became, was like, oh, that's fine. What if he just, like, stopped being annoyed at him? Just like, all right, cool, I have a cigar now. That's fine. You know, like,
sure.
What if he just, you know.
Well, that's what works so well by Data, is because, like, Q lives to needle people, but he can't needle Data. So,
that's
like,
true.
When Data just responds to him, like, it actually opens up Q's actual persona. Mm-hmm. Like, his facade has to drop because
Data. He depends on Data to, like, when he orders the 10 sundaes, he's like, I've never seen anybody eat those. Or he's like, you can't boss Geordi around because he's in charge.
Right.
He's like, oh. You know, like, so he's very, like, human things. He needs an android to tell him. Mm-hmm. And it is sweet when he later on says, like, you're a far better human than I could ever be, even if though he's immortal. And that's what makes Data so incorrigibly delightful, I think.
Yeah.
Because he is a good human as an android.
That's what makes this episode so incorrigibly delightful, because not only is it like the best comedy episode so far, but there's like a really good sci-fi story about what it means to be human in the middle.
And, exactly.
It's a classic.
Yeah.
And again, they were going to try to have some other weird storyline, and Gene Roddenberry, for the first time, had a good idea, and he was no, you have to make this about an omniscient being becoming human and what that would be like. So good job, Roddenberry. You actually did something good for me.
Bravo, Gene.
And I guess you made Star Trek. So.
We wouldn't have this podcast if it weren't for you. So we come back from the intro, and Q is wearing the most god-awful bit of costuming this series has presented us so far.
Did you call it a jumper?
I don't know.
The worst jumper in the world?
Where did they pull that from?
It's a onesie.
With like a dickie.
Well, but the lovely thing is, like, Q says, this isn't my color. And obviously this isn't anybody's color or outfit.
I don't give a shit about that. Yeah. Oh, my God. There's like one point later when he's like, can I get a uniform now? And I was like, please, God, give him a uniform so I can stop staring at that thing.
It's ugly.
I feel like it's basically what Wesley has to wear constantly. It's just ugly colors.
Yeah.
Good point.
So poor Wesley has to wear one of those
Wesley's isn't that bad.
He's got a rainbow on his.
His penis hasn't grown yet. It's fine.
It fits him better. Yeah, there's some moose knuckle at times in this one.
Hey, man. I'll take what I can get.
Apparently the Continuum can fire its members. So just like, you've been defrocked, they say at some point. Like,
defrocked.
They call it defrocked.
Oh, that
Picard uses that phrase at one point. I'm like,
funny. Now, wouldn't Troy be able to tell if he was lying or not? That was kind of one issue I had with this.
She's
they
not
have
a lie,
a lie detector here.
Is she not? Is she?
That's one of the few things she can consistently do is tell if someone is being sincere or not.
Yeah.
She knows he's terrified.
Yeah,
she can sense terrify.
No, she
kind of
just fucks with him because she's like, I can tell that you're terrified right now. Ha ha ha. Omniscient being that's been fucking with us forever. Like, she has a lot of little, like, weird.
I mean, if Q was still all powerful, he could probably make her think that he had emotions. So it's still not certain.
Right.
So the problem with this episode is like almost every line is one you could pull for an audio clip. Yeah. So we don't have every line from the episode, but here's our first one.
Because in all the universe, you're the closest thing I have to a friend, Jean-Luc.
Love Picard's look here.
Mm-hmm. Sir, he is reading as fully human. What, is there an echo in here?
I love John Delancey's tone of voice. He'll just put these spins on his lines that are just fast, just awesome.
Well, let's just jump into our second one here with his exchange with Worf, because I also love Q's relationship with Worf. He seems to be the one crew member Q takes a special delight in tormenting, I believe.
Right.
What must I do to convince you people?
Die.
Oh, Worf takes the very last. Clever, Worf. Eat any good books lately?
Fine. You want to be treated as human?
Absolutely.
All right. Mr. Worf, throw him in the brig.
Delighted, Captain.
You can't do this to me, Jean-Luc.
You will walk or I will carry you.
Given the option, I'll walk. You've disappointed me, Jean-Luc. I'm very disappointed.
I'm very disappointed.
Hey, I'm claustrophobic. I don't like it in here.
Now, I really feel like, again, this is the best comedy episode. And I think, like, the comedy writing is up a notch or two from any previous episode. And I wonder how much is improv, because that claustrophobia line felt like an improv from
Delancey.
Well, they
were definitely recorded later. So yeah. they not improv'd on the set, but they were definitely looped in because they sound different. Mm-hmm.
But I loved Riker's look when Worf says die. He just gives him most approving look Riker has ever given Worf. Like, I wasn't going to say it, so thank you.
Well, yeah, in Picard's face of being like, ugh. I'm your only friend.
See, what if Jean-Luc was just like, cool, hey, buddy, we're best friends now.
Let's go play some Monopoly, Boggle.
Yeah, I guess he's always had that animosity, so maybe if he switched it around, Q wouldn't be interested
in
him anymore.
Fuck with Q right back.
They could go play detective on the holiday.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Maybe Q would feel omnipotent again if he was on the holiday.
Oh. So inside that claustrophobic turbo lift is our first of very many interesting camera angles and shots in this episode. There's that really long 360-degree turn in the turbo lift as Q is pacing in that tiny turbo lift. They made a special turbo lift for that shot.
Hey, it was big.
And just lots of walk and talks down the corridors.
Aaron Sorkin must have written this episode.
I think so.
And this is where I ask you, Cameron.
Oh, uh-oh.
Do you think John Delancey could be a super soldier?
No, I do not think
that. I mean, that guy.
Oh, no.
Look at that guy. He's walking next to Data or Brent Spiner. And I'm like, he is a foot taller than Brent Spiner.
Super soldiers aren't tall. That's not like their defining feature.
60% of a previous episode were these two fighting about whether an actor was jacked or not.
Okay. I missed that one.
Yeah. She thought he was very jacked. He thought he was very scrawny.
So you're saying Q is
I think super
jacked,
soldiers
more jacked
can
than
be
Data?
Big and not bulbous. They don't have to be riddled
with
muscle.
They don't have to be bodybuilders.
They don't have to be Arnold Schwarzenegger, but maybe at least Jean-Claude Van Damme.
I mean, you can start to
see... They're the same level of musculature.
No. You can see Q's panis starting to create, I think, in
I'm
this
with
episode.
Bobby here. Like, I think the Continuum gave him a bit of a pot belly to, like, rub some salt in the wounds of becoming human.
I'm going to give up on this one.
Wait, is Q more jacked than that other
no.
guy?
No. Okay. But, I think... You can be, like, a big dude, have skills, and be a super soldier. And, like, that's kind of the point. If you're genetically made to be strong, you don't have to be, like, cut. And also, have you seen a cut person in Star Trek The Next Generation?
Yeah.
Oh, Joe Piscopo.
Joe Piscopo, yeah. The comedian.
We talked about that before. He's yeah.
He was pretty built.
Okay. Somebody that was actually meant to be a security person.
I'm just going to say, Marcy, if you made a gender swap Charlie's Angels with you and your team of super soldiers that consisted of John DeLancey, Roga Daynar,
Conan O'Brien.
And Conan O'Brien.
Yeah, he's
sure,
jacked.
I'd watch the shit out of
Paul.
Conan O'Brien with his shirt on?
He's tall.
No.
But continue. He's just tall and just.
Yeah,
what?
This guy is John DeLancey, right? With an N?
Yes.
Rob, give us a 5-minute time limit on this conversation.
Anyway.
Time's up.
Thank you.
You can chime in on our Facebook page once again and let us know who's winning this conversation.
I'm just saying, people don't have to be cut to be super soldiers.
Fascinated by this.
Yeah.
Aspect of Mars. I believe this is going to be a running conversation through the rest of our
show.
Yeah, I'm
never going to stop bringing
it up. I hope not.
I'll have a buzzer, an air horn, just put a stop to it.
Speaking of that sound, uh-oh, the Enterprise is getting scanned.
Oh, yeah. By more light.
Bright lights.
I like how no one is really perturbed except Riker.
Right.
Yeah, and it's just a low-level Berthold radiation. Yeah. And I was like, what the fuck is Berthold radiation?
Well, that's when they open up the aperture on the lens on the camera.
Oh, okay.
I'm worried at this point when the light comes into CQ that it's the light that impregnated Troy.
Oh, I know, right?
Oh,
I was
no.
thinking the same thing. Well,
maybe Q was going to get a bail of baby.
Do you think his semen is still, omniscient?
Oh.
So,
his
he
Q's
would
babies
be...
would be Q?
Yeah, exactly.
Only one way to find out. Bobby?
Maybe that's why he has the bulge, because he's anatomically correct, like Data.
Exactly.
You know?
I don't know that the Q have semen, but I don't know. Let me get the 5-minute timer.
I would have enjoyed seeing the R-rated version of this episode where Q learns the pleasures of humans.
Yeah.
He could have got a little bit more action, right?
I admit, I was... actually really disappointed he didn't try the chocolate sundaes. It's like, Q, if you're gonna be human, at least enjoy some human things.
But then we wouldn't have gotten that sweet punchline out of that
right.
scene. I'm not hungry anymore.
I guess I'm kind of happy that they didn't take the sexual angle, because I feel almost every episode is somebody hitting on the guest star.
Yeah.
And I'm just oh, finally, Data has a cool Pinocchio moment here.
That's
you
fair.
Know?
I mean, it doesn't have to be a City of Angels moment.
Right.
but I would. Although. Somebody should make that episode, redo it, at least in fan fiction.
Picard, of course.
Oh, God.
It would have been great to get a little bit more of Q's perspective of being human besides just, oh, my God, sleeping is torturous. And what is this hunger? Yeah. It would have been great to if he could explain in those phrases what his guilt and shame he's feeling are like. Or if somebody had hugged him or kissed him, maybe, I think that's something they could have brought back and played with later on.
Plus, they would have had at least one good boner joke. So.
Yeah.
He's like, what is this? And he's, what is this? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I do like when he fell asleep.
I realized that my body was no longer functioning properly. I felt weak. I could no longer stand. The life was oozing out of me. I lost consciousness.
You fell asleep.
Picard's delivery.
Yeah. So best line delivery.
Honestly, that whole joke setup was kind of obvious, but the actors milked it.
Yeah,
it was good.
I don't know. When I first watched that episode as a kid, I was like, what's happening to his body? And I was like, oh, shit. Oh, my God, that happens to me all the time. Ha, 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 Star Trek, thank you.
I never experienced that. I'm awake and then I'm asleep.
But you might not remember as a kid, that really deep sleep feeling.
I guess I do remember those moments of not wanting to fall asleep. And so you know how you're trying to keep your lids open? Uh-huh. Do you remember those?
Do you feel dying?
Yeah. And
that's Q's experience. He's dying, baby.
Why can't my eyelids stay open?
Right. Why don't I have control over my body right now?
When I wanted to stay awake, I would raise my hand in a fist above my head, and then I would test it to see. So when I fall asleep, it'll fall and land on my forehead. So I'm like, oh, so that'll wake me up. So yeah,
you turned your body into
a booby
Rube
trap.
Goldberg machine.
Yeah, that's right. It didn't ever work. I think I must have just slowly lowered it as I fell asleep.
Andrew always takes pictures of me because I'll fall asleep reading books. And so it'll be still sitting in the reading position, and I'll be like completely conked out with my like mouth wide open. I have no trouble falling asleep.
I envy you.
You have kids. That's kind of
actually
different.
I can fall asleep pretty good now. Now that I have kids, before I'd have my nights for like just thinking about too many things.
You're a night person.
I am also a night person.
You're always holding your fist above your head.
That's the problem. It's that white power salute I'm always doing at night.
Oh, shoot. No.
So it turns out.
Let's tell the audience you're not.
Yes, I was being sarcastic.
Okay,
when I was
thank
saying
you.
Those things.
He is doing the white power salute most episodes. For the entirety of most episodes.
I thought you knew, Marcy.
He's all right.
Fine.
It's fine.
So it turns out that Q is a moon expert, an expert of moons.
That's how he talks his way out, is like, I know moons.
Well, what's he say? He's like, little moons, small moons, big moons, moons that walk with, I don't know, how's the song go?
Fish heads?
Yes,
big
that's one, it.
Big moons, little moons, moons that
smell like fish heads.
Yeah, that's it.
I like how you got to the exact point that he did.
No, I thought I knew it. Fish heads, fish heads.
There are so many lines. They're so good. I love at one point Q is like, you only dislike me. There's people out there who really hate me.
Right. The idea of being disliked and disdain.
He's like, that's fine. I'll go hang out with people who dislike me.
Yeah. Maybe more of us should do that a little bit, you know?
But then one line I did grab is, because this is not just a great Q episode. As we kind of mentioned, it's a great Data episode.
One of the best.
I was considering the possibility that you were telling the truth, that you really are human. It's the ghastly truth, Mr. Data. I can now stub my toe with the best of them. An irony. It means that you've achieved in disgrace what I have always aspired to be.
I think that's the beginning of Q's arc of like, that's interesting. You want this? You want a piece of this?
Yeah, I like how he like always messes with almost every single crew member with some weird quip from a past episode. And that's kind of fun. This is a lot of callbacks to past episodes.
Mm-hmm. So he helps out. I'm noticing all my notes kind of read like children's book titles. Q gets hungry. Q helps out. Q takes a nap. Q finds redemption by sacrificing himself to save a planet from the degrading orbit of an asteroidal moon.
Classic in that last one's series.
Yeah, so I guess he goes to engineering to help out Geordi.
Yeah, he can still use his omniscient his knowledge.
2005 IQ.
And I can't remember what he says, but he doesn't really help them out right now with the moon because... my back!
Actually, no. I love it. He does help them out. He gives them the idea. No, he tells them that it's probably a black hole.
Oh, right, right.
But okay. I love that he does that even while he's in pain. Like, even in pain, he's still super smart.
Because his first day on the job. That he's bored out of his mind.
Because, and he's like... over the computer, like, who stands over a computer like that? Because he's so tall, like a super soldier.
Oh. Anyway. That comes off the timer.
But like Abraham Lincoln, super soldier.
Lurch from the Addams Family, the super soldier.
Or Mr. Holm, super
Beverly
soldier.
Crusher shows up.
Okay, so.
And I've never seen her so painfully work on somebody before. I thought this shit doesn't hurt in the future. And he's having the worst chiropractic adjustment of his life, basically.
And then, but when she shows up, he says, Starfleet has shipped you back into exile. So I like how he acknowledges that she was gone and that she came back, and he insults like even the idea that this would be better than where she was.
Right,
you
right.
Know?
I wish he had mentioned Pulaski. He should have. That would have been great.
Oh yeah, that would have been great.
Yeah, where's the other one?
Can't mention her by name anymore.
No.
So then Q gets hungry. He's got a little gurgle in his tummy. I love Crusher's little nod there too, like, maybe you're hungry.
Yeah.
She totally mothers him too.
She had no patience for him. I mean, he did stab Wesley. I was trying to figure out why she seemed to hate him right away.
Because he pierced Wesley through the chest.
Yeah, that's a pretty good reason.
And he got to fuck with him when he turned him into, made him think that he would actually grow up to be a handsome super soldier looking man. There's a super soldier right there, old Wesley.
Mm.
Not tall enough.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Yeah, that's always funny when you go back to that episode and you think about what what's his name looks like now. Yeah, and you're like, Will Wheaton, you didn't grow up to look like that guy.
So one of my favorite shots did come here. We had a close-up of a tray of food, space food.
Oh, yeah. As a transition shot.
Yeah, there's sesame balls. It looked like buffalo-style chicken strips and soap with silly string sprayed over it. So well-rounded meal. And space utensils.
I didn't notice the space utensils.
They had
the whole set,
knife, fork, and spoon.
Was one of those the one that gets used later to stab him?
It could have been.
That's like Chekhov's space fork. they have you. If you're going to show a space fork, you got to use a space fork.
It was so ornate. I mean, it was a beautiful space fork.
Yeah. Yes.
Although I do not require sustenance, I occasionally ingest semi-organic nutrient suspension in a silicone-based liquid medium.
Is it good?
Is it good?
It would be more appropriate to say it is good for me, as it lubricates my biofunctions.
That doesn't sound very appealing. What else is there?
But no, I do love this because, again, Q has given up like trying to fuck with Data, so he actually just uses him for help.
Yeah, exactly. And then he's like, I'm sad. What do I eat if I'm sad?
When Troy's sad, she gets chocolate.
Chocolate.
Like once a month, she does this thing.
I mean, these tropes in the future, really? There's no PMS in the future. Come on.
The one thing science couldn't solve.
Perhaps we're reading too much into it. Maybe she just does, you know, every
like chocolate.
Whenever she has a bad day, she
especially when she's on her period.
Wait a minute.
And then Guinan makes an appearance. You know she heard the scuttlebutt and was like waiting for this
moment. This whole episode I was waiting for Guinan.
Well, yeah. She's in the opening credits.
Like, I know. I didn't see her. Yeah.
Yay! Well, that, and I was just like, I knew if Q was going to be here, Guinan's going to be here. And we haven't seen, Guinan hasn't been in any of the episodes, I feel like, for at least six episodes.
Yeah.
And I was like, she's going to be so pissed. Oh, boy. Was
her saunter in.
Oh, man. And I loved what she was like wearing, too. It was like, right? She was ready to
like
rumble.
She's putting her hands in a pantsuit. Like, she's the godfather in a way.
Yeah.
It's a great 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She Three Stooges his ass. Like, stabs him with a fork. It's very, like.
That would have been amazing if she did, like, the eye poke and everything. Right? What did Q do to Guinan? Do we ever find out?
What is this? I mean, yes. I spent hours a day researching all of the fan theories, but I want to go to you guys first because I'm curious. I got to know, what do you guys think about this Guinan Q thing?
I assume he messed with her race, but I don't know why he's afraid of her.
Well, it's hard to talk about some of my thoughts because...
We will find out later.
...of Cameron Harrison.
Sorry, I'm the spoiler trap.
I do feel like her race, it was a genocide. And so I think that Q was involved in some way in either not protecting her race from genocide or just, you know, fucking with them.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an episode, I don't know if you remember this, where another Q episode where he sees Guinan and they both do this like Big Trouble in Little China, like, like this.
The wizard duel fingers.
And I was like, does Guinan have like... superpowers, like electricity powers? Like, what is happening
or
here?
Or maybe it's just her race's version of, like, flipping people the bird.
I don't know, but they both did it.
He was seemingly afraid of her.
Yeah, and he seems like she's definitely got more knowledge and lives a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I feel like her race was close to becoming a Q, because Q is afraid of other races achieving that level of omniscience. And so maybe they actually purposefully tried to halt the Guinan race from becoming omniscient.
That would make sense because they're such good listeners. They're, you know, that's why she's in her role.
She always
on the Enterprise.
Does seem to have the perfect advice.
They just kind of seemed like exes to me. I mean,
interesting.
Yeah,
they just, I mean, that look, I've been in that bar. I've turned my head and I said, oh, shit. Usually, I was Q in that situation. I've never been Guinan, but you know,
saying you stab someone in the hand,
you've been stabbed.
I would.
And then we discover a cloud of energetic plasma,
energy cloud.
That's right.
It's a calamarine.
Calamarine.
It's a trap.
Right, that's right.
From the calamarine. I don't know.
It is a very strange, like I don't know, happy sounding name. Like calamarine. They're here.
Let's get a marink. There's more sci-fi gobbledygook. They increase the harmonics to block the tachyon field while Q does a silly electric dance.
Oh, well, yeah, the Calamarine put ants down Q's pants, made him do some boogie dance.
Once again, we also see Geordi's very bad ergonomics over the consoles. It's like one hand over the other, and he's like straining his fingers to hit all the right buttons so he can get the shields up to the right amount for tachyon.
It's control alt delete. He's trying to reach the wrong. He's resetting.
It's tough for everyone. Look,
you got to reboot the console every once in a while.
Every IT person has their own technique to get them.
Yes.
He's booting it in safe mode. So. Yeah.
Before that, we did get to see, like...
Did you restart the Enterprise?
Yeah. Unplug it. Plug it back in.
Wait 10 seconds.
That's right.
We do see the first of Q's just like total sulks too. He gets sulky in this episode.
Yeah.
He'd be very depressed. Funny. He would be very, very depressed.
He would be.
If you went from being a god to a human, come on.
Yeah. I can tell you all about
it. Boring.
And you get back spasms like immediately.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Well, shouldn't he have like fresh, brand new muscles and like not have back spasms?
If he just wasn't so tall, he wouldn't fall so far.
Yeah.
That's right. He's got all that weight he's carrying around.
Panis.
You got a snort. Good job.
First of all, what I love about Bobby is she used the word fucking panis, which I had to teach one of my friends because I was like talking about one of my patients. And okay, so
time run.
If you don't want to hear gross shit, turn off your headset.
And unsubscribe.
Unsubscribe. So like a panis is when somebody has such like a big stomach that it like hangs down really low. And like I have a lot of patients that I work with that have them, and you have to like they put like towels and shit under there, and I was describing that to my friend, and he's like, "What do you mean panis?" So I've had to like define it for people, and I am impressed that you even knew that word, because it's usually like a medical term.
You just have to date one nurse. They call them FUPAs, though.
Oh, sure.
Okay. I won't. That's an acronym. You could look it up yourself.
Front. Okay. Front upper.
But it can get a little moist and yeasty. Sure. I mean, because it's
yeah, so... they use powders and things. All right,
Cameron's noting the time code. He's noting the time code for where it cut.
No, and when you are a child of the age range of 12 to 14, you like to share really grotesque stories with your friends at the lunch table. And you'd try to outgross each other. I remember the winning story we had back in the day was this person came into the doctor's complaining about stomach aches and pains. Oh, and the doctor asked a lot of questions. And we didn't know the term at the time. But the doctor lifted the panis and found like a two-month-old sandwich like fused to the belly fat.
I think I've actually heard that gross out story.
Very gross out story. I always assumed it was just a story that you used to gross out your friends. One of our friends then went off to doctor school, and we met up a couple years ago, and he met the doctor who actually did that.
Whoa.
And found the sandwich. He the panis sandwich.
Surgically removed the sandwich.
I don't know if they removed it. That's not part of the story.
Guys, if you have a panis, you gotta keep that stuff clean.
Just keep it clean. It's okay. No shame.
I mean, just finish the sandwich first.
Yeah. Did they eat the sandwich?
They probably fell asleep like Marcy does and just dropped the sandwich.
Can you imagine if I had a panis? There'd be so many things.
Andrew would be hiding things. Yeah. Andrew would just hide things in there.
I'd be like,
where's my chocolate milk?
And I'd pull the chocolate milk from my panis. It's still good.
What's in here? DVD of Cool Runnings? All right.
Nice. I haven't watched this in 10 years.
What would you keep in your panis, Cameron? Bobby, what would you keep in your panis?
French fries.
Nice. Oh, good. I'd avoid food, you guys. I think you should really go non-perishable.
A stress ball, maybe?
That's better.
Stress ball.
What would you want to have
extra
access?
Batteries.
I'd have some, like, ooh, yeah, five double A batteries. Tacos under there.
I'm saying food's a bad idea.
Well, there is a taco under there. Fupa.
Oh, no.
Nice try.
Not quitting.
It's just because Q has a little panis. It's not because of your panis. It's Q's panis we're talking about specifically.
Comment
and the guest star Bobby Blue will answer all trolling.
He's got a pot at most. You little pot belly.
What would you put in your panis? Chime in on our Facebook page. What does Q keep in his panis?
Oh,
keep my replica phaser.
I think Q keeps a galaxy in his pants.
Yeah. Probably.
That's where the Keller Moraine went to. Yeah. Him away at
that's
the
it. That's why they're so mad at him.
Why does he hate him so much? What is it? The calamari pig thing? What is it? Like, why does he hate the calamari? What is it about that?
I think they hate him because he did the same thing that he does with all the other races.
Yeah. He fucked with them, and they're trying to get. And so now he's mad at them at the end. He's mad at them for having made him do the pants, dance.
Yeah. Twice. I do like, because they ask him that, what did you do to the Calamarain? And he says, well, nothing grotesque, which is a callback to a word he used the last time we saw him when he said, there are things in this universe both grotesque and beautiful.
Yeah.
That's a word Q likes.
When he
word
says,
I like that he uses.
When he says it's nothing grotesque, he means I didn't put it up my butt.
No butt stuff. Well, I put them under my panis.
They're like, we've been in his panis for a long time, motherfuckers.
Finally.
Give us our panis revenge. Yeah, we have this line here because once they give Q another chance to go help figure out this moon problem,
I know. It's like, why are we back at this moon again? Like, you forget that it's even part of the storyline.
Right. They do cut back to the doctor and the scientist. They're like, oh, yeah, the butt faces are part
it's
of this episode.
It's still happening, Picard. We're going to die.
How? Only in this episode could I forget anus faces.
They're so whiny.
Help us.
Oh, we're sure you did your best. Don't worry.
We appreciate
everything. We're still going to build you a statue.
They
don't worry.
They're pretty appreciative for people that are about to
they are.
All die.
kind of calm.
He's like, no, don't be rude. He's like, no, wait. We appreciate all you've done. Don't be rude.
The parents like, I'm working on it. I'll get back to you. And they're like, okay. Basically, they're just like waiting. When's he going to text back? I don't know. Is he ghosting us? Maybe.
Yeah, Enterprise just takes off.
Yeah. I love the idea of them just being like, I guess we can't figure this out. Can we just leave?
We can't fix this. Prime Directive, right? We just say it's the Prime Directive?
Prime Directive.
Can't do it.
But don't they solve it with just a warp field or a force field? Like
extending their warp field.
Yeah. So he goes down there with Data and they have another great walk and talk exchange.
To function aboard a starship, or in any human activity, you must learn to form relationships.
Oh, it's so hard.
And then Data gives him a look where he's like, yeah, that's true. It's tough being the smartest one in the room.
And relationships is hard on like a good day for most people. But could you imagine being like an omniscient being who doesn't give a fuck about anything and then suddenly you have to like be nice?
And suddenly right. You have to host a podcast with three other people.
Well, are you talking about me?
No.
Yeah.
No, Marcy.
It's hard. I'm saying.
I'm definitely Data in this. I'm like, let me explain how you make friends with other people. Because I know the best ways.
Yeah, right. Geordi, meanwhile, outpips Q in every way possible.
It's barking orders.
I don't think I've seen Geordi like this before.
Mm-hmm. No, he is assertive as shit.
Right?
Like, he's the first one that says, oh, let's just kill him.
I know, right?
I was like, what, Geordi? You're like reading Rainbow. What's happening?
It does become a good, like, well, we either save Q or save a planet. Like, you know, Geordi's practical, if nothing else. He's like, well, let's see, planet or Q. Yeah, fuck Q.
Fuck you.
Fuck you. I didn't mean that.
You workshopped that one, right?
No.
It was perfection.
I'm not necessarily saying that
Q represents God. So what are they saying about that?
He doesn't represent God.
You don't think so?
He's
omnipotence?
God.
He's not even a god. He's
powers.
Are we going to talk about how, like, because something has abilities that you don't have, you think it's a god, but it's just knows things that you don't know.
Like, my cat can reach his ass with his tongue, and I can't, so he must be
a god. Must be a god.
Must be a god.
I'm not sure that's how that works.
Did I not follow that line of thought?
Can your cat?
I thought you did. Well,
okay. Can your cat change the gravitational pull of the universe?
Like, I don't know that it can.
Episode with Picard where you see that tapestry everywhere.
Yeah. Is this the first episode? And since you all have been watching them so amazingly and doing a
diligently
fucking fantastic job, but is this the first episode where you see Q, like the hierarchy of Q?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well,
they talk about
it. They kind of punish him at the end of the one where he turns Riker into a Q.
Yeah, they like.
He gets like taken away and
reprimanded at some
point.
Yeah. But,
you don't ever see a Q until another Q.
This is definitely
until
the first time we meet another Q.
Yeah.
Q2.
Right.
Well, was my favorite part where Q drank too many fizzy lifting drinks and went up the little fan room.
Yeah.
What?
He starts floating. He gets zapped again. Oh. He starts floating away.
Like, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Oh, okay.
He looked just like that when Data grabs onto
quit?
Him.
I quit.
He quit.
Willy Wonka references?
She gave
the straw that broke.
She's like Picard annoyed with Q. She's like, fizzy lifting drink. Get out of here with that shit. No Willy Wonka references
here. Oh, my God.
I
also thought that, like, both times he gets zapped, Data's, like, response to it, I think somebody gave him a direction, and he was like, I'm just going to stand around him and move my hands around
Where's
Q?
The best place to grab?
In the first zap, especially.
Yeah. And then the second one, there's a
So they're all standing around Crusher and Geordi. I like that Crusher and Geordi work together on Data. We've mentioned this in a previous episode where they do, but that's a fun little dynamic.
Yeah. I really love those scenes.
Mm-hmm. But yes, here Q does go and have a nice conversation with Picard. He is finally starting to feel human emotions.
Ashamed.
Shame, because he would not have saved Data.
He feels like he's miserable. He's a coward. Mm-hmm. He admits.
Oh, yeah, he's afraid. He's afraid of dying. He's afraid of all the things that have to go along with being mortal.
But he's even more afraid of just being human, so he opts for dying.
Which is, like, it's not even, it's been like a day.
I know, yeah. Right? I can't take it. Kill me now. I've been alive for eons, but.
Yeah, one day at work, back spasms, I'm out. Blow me up.
That's because you didn't eat your 10 chocolate sundaes, Q.
I bet he was kicking himself, too. It
would have been nice if when he was on the shuttle, he, like, pulls up one. He's like, yeah. Just one.
I mean, I guess after a millennia of being omnipotent, like, it wouldn't take long for you not to be yeah. like, yup, I'm out.
I'm out.
I can't handle this. This is, it'd be very depressing for a very long time.
I do think the one thing that I don't quite believe is this idea that he doesn't understand emotions. Mm-hmm. Because if you're omniscient, you would know all of the emotions and more emotions than maybe even humans experience. Mm-hmm. So this idea that he's completely flummoxed by, like, the basics is kind of weird.
I think he can intellectually understand them without, like, internalizing them. Like, yeah, a sociopath understands what it means to be happy and sad and angry, but they don't feel those necessarily.
Right, but you know he's probably experienced every experience that there is to exist.
Not necessarily.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that's implied or not. And he's apparently never seen anybody be hungry before, so he might just be an idiot.
It's a tangent, but I really wish they would have let him go to the bathroom.
Yeah. Or if he described his
or
first...
I just show the audience what a bathroom...
Q's first poop. It just popped in my head.
Or he,
I have that book, too. Q's first poop.
He
just,
nice. He could describe his first fart and like, what's happening to me?
What was that noise that just came out
there
of me?
There was a duck in my pants. That's a dad-level joke.
Right? Yeah, I was like,
I never understood my dad. Like, it doesn't sound like a duck.
What barking spiders is what Aaron's dad would always say.
Barking spiders.
They're barking spiders. I would say, they must have just painted this elevator. Because when you fart in an elevator, you just blame it on, no, it's fresh paint. So I just say it no matter where I am. Oh, they must have just painted this elevator.
My go-to with my kids is like, I farted.
Yeah.
But what, like, no subtlety there.
But what do you do with your elevator full of people? You're like, I farted.
Yeah. What do you do with your
he
coworkers?
He farted.
Q steals a shuttlecraft.
Yeah, he does. Well, first he does have that great scene with Data. Where,
oh, right.
And I love that they made it that Data's language wasn't working. So
yeah,
it was a cute touch.
Yeah.
There are creatures in the universe who would consider you the ultimate achievement, android. No feelings, no emotions, no pain. And yet you covet those qualities of humanity. Believe me, you're missing nothing. But if it means anything to you, you're a better human than I.
And then he... That's when he farts.
They just painted the turbo lift.
That touching moment. Tearing up a little bit.
I know, Rob.
Yeah, I can't
and
have
then
that.
A
Thanks I can't
a
have
lot.
That. Sorry.
No, good. Thank
sorry,
you. Thank
not
you.
Sorry.
I'm sorry because that was a very sincere moment.
If Marcy's not enjoying the fart joke, Rob, something is wrong.
He looks like a dildo.
No, you're breaking up my sincere moment.
Okay, shit.
It was a great moment, and then so Data gives him a little look. It's
yeah.
good. It was good.
And you're like, okay, Q's figuring out some shit. Like, even if it's not as deeply felt as maybe a human mm-hmm. would feel it, he's yeah. recognizing that he might have some flaws.
But he says it's not worth it. It's not worth it to be a human. Mm-hmm. But you endeavor, Data, is not worth it. Mm-hmm. Trust
so it's
me
all
in
that
this.
More noble a quest.
Then why does he choose to be a human? And he could be a spider. He could be oh, any mortal
Q?
Thing.
Yeah. Because Q likes humans.
Yeah.
I know what he
also,
says, but he's...
Also, he knows the Enterprise will protect him from,
there
his,
is that.
From exactly. his foes.
And I think
although
there
if he was a spider, would anybody know about it? How did the other people know he was?
Yeah, right.
Who sent that memo out?
I have this theory that Q has an overarching plan, and he's like what runs like half of what happens in TNG.
Interesting. Mm-hmm.
You're right, you should
I
write
think
that.
It's homoerotic love for Picard, but that's just
that
me.
Too.
I mean, there's I mean, some sincerity, I think, when he said Picard was his closest thing to a friend.
Well, I also noticed at the end, I started listening to their conversations, And the only person that talks pretty much exactly like Q is Picard.
No.
Because he says a lot of those big words. He talks in the same way that Q talks, just a little bit more respectfully.
I do like, at one point, Q's like, oh, I knew I'd be safe here because of your compassion. Like, no matter how terrible he is, he knows the crew of the Enterprise will help him. And Picard's like, fuck that. I'm getting rid of you at the next starbase.
Yeah.
Love that.
But he said starbase. He wasn't just like dropping him off in the middle of nowhere.
He wasn't going to shoot him out into the ion cloud.
That still kind of screws the starbase, though.
Yeah, just go drop him off on that moon that's going to crash into the planet.
Shoot him into the moon. Maybe that's what will be enough to push it forward. But speaking of, Q does leave the Enterprise to save the moon.
And he's on his shuttlecraft and ba-ding! In pops Q2.
Q2.
Well, I like that he says first he's going to, like, I guess death of a coward it is then, like that line.
That's
in
a good
there.
Line.
And then Picard says to perfectly good shuttlecraft, let's beam it back.
That was a funny line.
Which was a good line delivery as well.
I'm still wondering what Picard's plan was, though, because he also knew that they weren't going to be able to save that planet as long as Q was on board.
He was going to figure something else out.
They always do.
Goddamn Picard.
That's true.
They much always, like, Geordi, give me more power. Okay, I guess I will. Yeah. Like a Scotty.
But then he has Q2. It says the credited Q2.
Oh, is it?
I've written Q number two in mine. And yes, but he's credited as Q2. It's Corbin Burnson.
I recognized him.
He is in 247 Things. Our listeners probably know Corbin Burnson from something. Me and Cameron both agreed that we know him best from Major League.
Major League. I believe we see him in his skivvies in that.
He's the aging baseball player who's he's in a ton of stuff, including, I don't know. Yeah, other than that, Corbin Burnson's just a well-known.
Jag.
Dude, he's not in Jag. He's not in Jag.
Damn it!
No Jag.
He's really good here. I love, because at first when he showed up, I was like, why do the fucking Q always look like human? That's ridiculous. But then you realize he did it for Q.
That's why he's wearing the same clothes.
Because then he starts doing all that great stuff with his hands where he's
and
like,
not what realizing what I'm doing with my hands. Yeah.
All these little things on my hand look like tiny dildos. That's what he said.
He is really acting it up. he's so animated.
He is. I liked him.
But apparently the Q continuum gives a shit about selfless acts. I would not have expected that from them. They're like, we can't kick you out now. You did a selfless act.
He talks
seems
about
like a weird morality.
The bureaucracy. I was like, is there a paperwork?
Made it sound like that. I mean, if they can fire Q, a whole race of managers.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like the relationship between the two of them. You could tell that they kind of had like a very competitive friendship.
Mm. Yeah.
We're about to fire your ass out of the universe. What do you want to be that's mortal? Oh, you want to go fuck with Jean-Luc Picard? Okay, that'll be fun for us too.
Yeah, I think there's like a loose bureaucracy where if a majority says that, Q's causing us trouble, I don't think they care if he's causing mortals trouble, but if it starts like making them have to do work.
Yeah, he was saying like they would have like to go in and clean up the solar system after he left.
They're like the union. I think maybe they can continue with the union, you know?
This episode has a couple of kind of, the first kind of almost meta jokes I think we've had in Star Trek. There's this one, though, which I liked.
They just tried to beam you up, back, whatever it is they call it.
I thought that was great. And then later when he mentions he has a quip about Riker's beard. Oh, yeah. I was a little bit of a fan wink wink. And I was like,
so
oh,
for the fans.
That's kind of the first time you've done that, Star Trek. That's nice. I like it.
Yeah. He gets his powers back, and he shrinks the Calamarians.
Yes.
Calamarine.
It's a trap! And took a fart into his hand, basically.
Yeah.
Exactly. He finally learned how to fart.
He should have. Yeah.
That was your moment, Bobby. You got it all along.
Yeah. Man, that would have been so... Instead of blowing them away at the end, he should have
farted
on
them.
I think it would have lost me at that point if he had done that.
It would have been a 10 instead of a 9.5, but all right.
So he gets his power back and he's like, fuck yeah, bitches.
Good
and he's
to go.
Like, goes and creates a mariachi band on the bridge.
Guys, in this episode, like so many meme moments.
Yep.
In this episode, so many images I have seen
Facepalm.
For the past 30 years. I finally revealed, Riker with the girls, Data laughing, the mariachi band, the facepalm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Data's laughing is, like, iconic. Like, Andrew and I were sitting there, and we're like, oh, this is it. This is the scene, the laughing scene. And we stopped because Brent Spiner does such an amazing job with it. I mean, it's just, it's so funny. It makes you want to laugh, and it made the crew want to laugh watching it. I mean,
it's a pretty
good
moment.
You can see it on their faces. I didn't read that it made them want to laugh, but like when you see their faces, it's like, it's hard not to just be like delighted that Data finally gets to laugh, you know?
Right.
Data.
Try to stop.
Data, why are you laughing?
It's great that Q says, no, idiot, I'm not going to make you human, but I'm going to give you laughter.
Yeah.
Which he's saying is not a human thing. That's a cosmic joke. There's
cosmic
jokes.
A universal thing.
You know?
Yeah.
So you don't have to be human to laugh, which is, I think, cute and interesting in a weird way. How that's not human.
What were those 24th century hookers wearing?
Why are you calling them hookers?
Because of what they were wearing. Like, what? Who were they? That wasn't just normal future wear.
Yeah, what were they wearing?
It was like it was like two strips of fabric over their breasts.
Yeah, it was like Bud Light girls wear, but sparkly with more glitter involved.
Yeah, there was a lot of side boob happening. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Q was right. Riker was much randier in the first season, I realized. Before he had the beard, he was
Horn dog.
That's what he was.
It would have been hilarious if Q grew a beard over this one day of his life.
Oh,
yeah. And became svelte as fuck.
Yeah.
Ended the scene in a smoking jacket or something.
You had to give everybody, or at least Riker and Picard, cigars.
Yes.
That was great.
Mm-hmm. And there is a really perfect Picard facial expression at the end where he's like pursing his lips about going, I guess he did have some residue of humanity.
Yeah.
And he like goes, he like squishes his lips out. And I was like, that's fucking hilarious. And then Q shows up with the cigar in his mouth. But like, I loved all of Patrick Stewart's facial
Well, it wasn't in his mouth. It was even better than that because he was in mid Make It So and his fingers were in the Make It So gesture and it appears
like
in his fingers.
Cigar holding motion.
Yeah. So he kind of fucked up his key signature line there at the end.
Cute.
That's what really pissed off Picard.
Classic.
Classic.
Let's rate this mother.
Let's do it. What are we rating it?
I don't know. Sandwiches under your penis?
Tacos under your pants.
Sundays. It's got to be Sundays.
Yeah, no, you're right. How 1 to 10 Sundays. Sundays. That's perfect.
Okay.
Chocolate Sundays. In your penis. Of course, they all become one in there. If you put multiple Sundays, they're all going to combine. Now, if Cameron
it's like
can't
a camel,
Cameron, we've made so many callbacks to Panis. You can't cut the explanation of Panis out. I'm gonna give it 9.5 Sundays. Not quite a 10, but pretty close. I'm afraid there's gonna be something slightly better maybe later.
I agree. 9.5 Sundays. Yeah. 10 Sundays, but the cherry's fallen off of one.
Sure,
guys. I'm also 9.5.
Whoa! We haven't been in agreement in a while.
I know that there's some that I want to give 10s.
Sure.
But this was way up there.
Mm-hmm. No, this was really good.
What do you think, Bobby? Whoa. Don't feel any pressure.
So hard. Hold on. My penis is saying.
You got a gift of this.
I'm going to give it 9.5 Sundays.
Whoa!
Sundays. Can't go wrong with a Q and a Data special, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You can't go wrong with that.
What are the missteps, if any, you know?
I mean, just that it's too short. Like, you know, had it been a two-parter and, like, stretched out his arc, it could have been a little more developed.
His arc did seem a little abrupt.
We didn't
but
get enough.
Not enough of
Honestly, there's too much butthole face. I was like, why are we still talking to these butthole face guys when there's, like, awesome, funny Q in the next room?
Nice.
I agree.
Q pooping, of course, is what.
It was more of a human stuff. But in a two episode thing, you could have explored that. Kiss or indigestion or hiccups.
Sweaty
or
armpits.
Whatever.
Or like you said before, true emotion.
Right.
Or shame or guilt.
What is this thing coming from my eye? Oh, it's salty.
So wet.
Oh, it's a tear.
I am crying from Data being on the bed of pain.
Maybe Data and Q could have made out.
If there was going to be making out, it'd be between Picard and Q. Okay,
that's who it does need to be.
Ooh, that's so hot. Somebody make that.
You know that Q is Polly.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And Picard is
just reserved about everything. Yeah.
Ace.
He's into horses.
He likes archaeologists, so if you're male or female, he likes jodhpurs.
You know, yeah, I was going to say, if Q put on a pair of jodhpurs, Q would like turn himself into a centaur.
That's true.
Well, come onto our social medias and let us know what you would have liked to have seen Q do in this episode. You can find us at facebook.com/greenshirt. Also, at greenshirt87 is our Twitter account. And as always, head into that iTunes void and click a 5-star rating and leave us a review if you like.
And go to at greenshirt podcast on Instagram for Instagram pictures.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Cameron.
It's going to be all panis for the next week. Just a panis gallery.
Oh my god, that's amazing. Like, shit. I'm just going to Photoshop shit into panises.
Oh, God.
Not actual shit.
No. I think sandwiches.
Things.
Shit and...
10 Sundays.
10 Sundays. Tacos.
Riker's beard.
Cool Runnings. Riker's beard.
We could make a one of those pop-up books with the, like, folding...
Oh, man. So, Cameron, the next episode is called A Matter of Perspective.
Wow.
So
it's probably going to be kind of a Rashomon style, like...
A what?
Rashomon.
What does that mean?
Rashomon.
Rashomon, yeah.
Rashomon.
Rashomon.
So, you know, a story where everyone kind of tells their own version of events of what happened. So it's probably like Data's birthday party. Geordi's ship in a bottle got broken, and it ended with Wesley getting a pain stick to the eyeball. And everyone has a different telling of how that happened.
I like that.
Wow. You brought out a word I've never heard before.
It's a movie. A Japanese movie where this one crime is told from 3 different points of view, and each one is slightly different telling of the same event.
All right, I'm just not a movie nerd.
Akira Kurosawa.
Akira. He's right.
And you have to say it like that, apparently.
That's how you pronounce it, okay.
Kurosawa.
That's how you know you're
right.
You
true. Cinephile.
Bobby, do you have any plugs?
Oh, yeah.
Do I got any
your
plugs?
Your band.
Ooh.
Oh, I guess you could check out my band. It's called Saint Love Revolts.
Nice.
We're all playing over the things. After you click on iTunes for a green shirt, definitely look us up. Other than that, you just keep watching, mofos. It gets better.
Hey, 9.5. That's pretty good for...
Yeah.
I was looking ahead to some of the titles coming up, and there's some good ones, I think. I've heard tales of.
Uh-huh. There's a Tasha episode.
What? Down. Tasha's dead.
About that.
Tasha is dead, Marcy. You need to get over it.
She's a Q now.
She's not coming back.
She comes back as a Q.
She dead.
Oh, wait and see.
The tar monster keeled her. All right. Well, thank you all for listening.
Thank
it was
you, Bobby.
A great episode.
Yeah,
thank you
my
for
pleasure.
Coming,
thanks
Bobby.
Thanks for having you guys.
Great job.
Yay. Thank you. You guys are wonderful.
And we promise we'll probably have 50% less Panis talk next episode.
50%
okay.
less.
Damn it.
All just right. 50%. That's still like
still a lot
that's
of still,
that's a lot of pain.
It's still 20 minutes of episodes.
I kind of feel like I mentioned Panis like earlier in season one too, to be honest. But
probably. If you faithful listeners can find that clip and send it to us. All right. Thank you.
Thank
Goodbye.
You.
Bye. Cheers. Happy New Year.